Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Harry.
Hello.
And I'm Josh. And we are going to be talking about today whether video games are really bad for you or whether they're actually good. And spoiler alert, I think they're mostly good, although you have to have the right attitude towards them to get the benefits. Otherwise, they can be bad.
All things in moderation.
Yes. There shouldn't be much of a surprise to most people.
Big shock.
Yes. Moderation is good. But why am I actually talking about this? What is my motivation? Well, I've seen lots of right-wingers in our sort of political spheres who we'd ordinarily agree with, arguing that video games are just a waste of time and they're childish and that you should do something more productive with your lives, which I think isn't a very helpful view on the matter.
I'm just going to say it for what I think it is right now. It's a pretty boomer tier take.
Yes. But there are also people on the other side as well, the progressives that say video games are racist and sexist and all these other
terms. Why do you think I'm playing them?
Yes. It's a continuation of the male fantasy, of course.
This is why I hate video games. They appeal to the male fantasy.
But yes.
Cut to image of Red Dead 2 petting dog.
Yeah, they can be very wholesome, of course. But I think that in many cases, video games have more of a claim to being an art form than perhaps even things like TV and cinema, if done correctly, because there is more involvement with the person viewing it. So, of course, it's going to invoke more subjective experiences than, say, TV and cinema. And one of the metrics we can judge those on is what are the strengths of the emotions that they invoke in people. So on those terms, you could argue that, yes, well, this is very effective because it actually engages you and involves you in the process of the art, doesn't it?
Well, certainly for an example of my own, other than a rare few films, I don't get scared at horror films. And I'm not saying that to big myself up or anything. I've watched plenty of scary horror films which have made me jump and made me go, ooh, but very few of them have much of a lasting impact on me. And I think it is because a lot of horror films tend to rely on jump scares or more superficial modes of horror. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm a fan more of the creeping dread, the kind of thing that you can feel creeping
and
tingling.
That's the stuff that has the lasting effect, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. And that's why a film, I know some people really don't like the director Ari Aster and his sequel, his second film, Midsommar, but I'm a big fan of Hereditary, that film, and there is some really creepy imagery in that that stuck with me. There's some creepy imagery in some David Lynch films and some other such stuff as well that really sticks with me, but I get a much more visceral fear response from video games than I do from films, to the point where, say, for instance, listen, I know you're watching this hyping. If you're and I will be playing Silent Hill 2 soon so that we can do a video on it. I promise, fingers crossed, I get the time to do it soon. But when I played Silent Hill 2 for the first time years and years ago at this point, it really did force me to put the controller down and step away from this console a few times and just look away from the screen, because it just the tension and atmosphere that it built, and the fact that it being a game, being a more interactive medium, not passively sat there, I emotionally involved myself.
It's
far
more immersive, isn't it?
Yeah, it was way more immersive, which meant that I felt that fear in much more effectively. It really stuck with me.
So there we go. There's a very good demonstration. And I want to draw attention to a video that Callum actually directed me to from Andrew Claven, where he argues on his Daily Wire platform that video games are very much a legitimate art form. And he mentioned that he gets flack from the other Daily Wire staff for holding that position. But he's right.
I'm sure he's experienced some boomer takes from Matt Walsh and others.
Yes.
I like some of Matt Walsh's stuff. You know, I appreciate everything that he does, but he's definitely a boomer when it comes to such things.
Yes. And it's also a very pertinent question as well, because, of course, we talk about culture quite a lot. I mean, we're talking about the culture war quite often in our podcast segments. And so the direction of the culture is very important. And according to this article on Gaming Bible, video games were the most popular form of entertainment in 2022 by far. And I'm just going to read a short extract. This is just for the UK, but I don't think that's in any way unique. It must be true everywhere else in the world as well, because our media consumption seems to be more or less the same in the entire Western world, right? But it reads as follows. Digital Entertainment and Retail Association's 2022 report estimates that across music, video and video game sales, the UK's home entertainment market earned a colossal $11.1 billion in 2022, which is the equivalent to $13.49 billion US dollars. And out of that, video games accounted for 42.1%, which is a very significant portion. It's almost half at this point. So it's fair to say that if almost half of all entertainment are video games, we need to look at...
Is that entertainment consumption, I assume? So purchases,
well,
sales.
Home entertainment,
yep.
Purchases, yes. So obviously 2022, still sort of tail end of pandemic, so might be a bit more in the favour of...
Yeah,
more
I imagine
that
2020 video game consumption probably did jump up a little bit, just because even for those who were playing games before, all of a sudden you're able to work from home, which means that you might be able to, say, you know, have your computer there and sneak in a few sneaky games of something. I'm not saying that I did this or anything, but there was certainly more opportunity to get your work done. And in that time where you would have been in the office just sitting around pretending that you're working, you instead...
Do a lot of that, do you?
No. No, and I'm not saying that I ever have, or that you at work right now, if you're watching this, you should switch this off and get back to work. don't. But that's what people did. That's just a fact, that a lot of people were able to do that sort of thing. It gave them more opportunity to sit down and catch up with some games. Because I don't have a gaming PC, sadly, but I know everybody who does have a gaming PC with Steam has a mountain of games in their Steam library that they bought on Steam sales and never played. So it gave them a lot of opportunity to catch up on that. I'm getting a knowing look from you right now.
So one thing I did want to cover is in this discussion, people's attitudes towards free time seem to come up a lot. And I think that there are some things that need to be addressed here so that everyone's on the same page. And I think that it's better to view video games, particularly their usage, in reference to other forms of entertainment. Because I think it's a false dichotomy to say, okay, well, you either work or you play video games, therefore it's always better to work. Because there are only a finite number of days and hours in the day that you can work effectively. And it's important to not work yourself to exhaustion every day, because that's not healthy for you and it's not sustainable and it's not going to help your work. You need some sort of entertainment, something to give you a break, because that is healthy. And I think everyone has an intuitive sense of this to some degree. The people, those weirdos online that talk about grind sets and how any minute wasted is a, you know, some dollars lost.
As far as I'm aware from the research that I've seen that has been done, that is indicative literally of psychopathic mindset. Being able to work constantly almost 24 hours a day without switching off is a sign that there is something actually wrong with your brain. So I think we all know intuitively, we've all been at work sometimes, and you know that generally speaking, there may be a cutoff point at a certain hour in the day when you know that most of your energy will have been spent by then. So for instance, if like you're in a job like ours, say you're able to get writing done at your most effective pace for say 4 to 5 hours. So say it hits about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you know that at that point, okay, any more writing that I do is just going to be forced. I'm going to have to go back and edit it, and it's going to be more of a waste of time than it would be a productive use of my time. And so I'm going to do it spending something, maybe researching instead. Maybe I'll watch a video on a subject that I'm looking into. We all instinctively know that we have those feelings.
I find that I get burnt out by about 7 o'clock. Anything intellectual after that point?
What, 7 o'clock in the morning before you even get here?
I'm still asleep by that point, I think. But no, 7 o'clock in the evening. So I know roughly what time works for me. And I know that from about that point, I've done everything that I need to do productive. I get it out of the way and then treat myself to playing video games, which I see as a bit more engaging than TV and film. I find them more rewarding, which we'll talk about in a minute. But that's my point of indulging myself a little bit. And I think that that's actually quite healthy. And viewing it as some sort of waste of time, that you need to be working all the time, as you said, is not a healthy attitude.
I think you're right in the false dichotomy that's split, mm-hmm. because it's not just like video games are the only thing that you can do. There are other choices that you can make, and it's people's decision to choose how they spend their spare time. And playing a video game is going to be more productive than, say, sitting around watching Love Island for 2 hours. And I yeah. know plenty of people who do that, and it does not help their cognitive mm-hmm. abilities whatsoever. In fact, I would say it drains them.
Mm-hmm. There's also something that I think gets even less attention, and that is the value of being entertained. So when you find something engaging, it matters, and your level of engagement in an activity is reflective of how much it's benefiting you in some way. It might not necessarily be clear to you how it's benefiting you at the time, but if you have interest in it, you're getting something out of it because you have this innate curiosity and interest in novelty. And if you're drawn to something that's interesting, there must be something for you there to some degree. And I think that this might be something quite unique to my own worldview. I don't know whether this is something that people share, but at least in my opinion, this seems to be the case. Maybe I'm just interested in productive things. I don't know. But once you've mastered something, it might become quite tedious, in that if you're good at something, it no longer feels as rewarding as when you were first involved in it. So almost following your intuition to what is interesting can be quite a good thing if, you know, done appropriately, because it leads you to things that you're going to be interested in that will potentially spiral into something bigger, and thus you gain the benefits for it.
Is this why you dislike reading so much? You're like, well, I've mastered reading. I can read sentences now. I'm bored of it. You're just like, once upon a time, that's all I need to know. In the bag, done. Well, no, I get what you mean, though, because it's interesting that you say that, because it is very relevant to video games, because video games, there is such a thing. If you're playing, obviously, if you're playing experiential games or walking simulators or those kinds of games, it's pretty easy to just be able to push the left stick forward or hit the W key and just follow the instructions that the game is leading you by the hand so that you can experience the narrative or whatever. But for games that are more skill-based, more gameplay focused, you have the skill floor and the skill ceiling. And a lot of the enjoyment that comes from a game can be reaching the skill floor, being the minimum level of skill required to be able to play the game competently. Say, one of my favorite game series is Devil May Cry, Japanese Capcom series. If you've played it, you know that it can get very, very tricky if you go up to the higher difficulty levels. There's the skill floor to be able to get through a particular mission, and generally you just need to be able to mash the buttons. Because triangle, 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 that's a decent enough combo. Square, 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 you use ebony and ivory, shoot the demons you're fighting, and you'll be able to get through a mission relatively well if you're on the lower difficulties. But by the time you're getting to the higher difficulties, you'll need to really put the work into mastering each of the combos, knowing when to use dodge steps and other such skills, knowing how to maximize your capability of all of the different moves. And that in itself can be a rewarding experience to master those skills. And also, because of the timing involved in it, I would imagine it also has a beneficial it benefits your reaction time outside of the game as well, I'd imagine.
That's quite a good segue. But I think games like From Software games and shooters and things like that, like first-person shooters, where there's a very high skill ceiling to getting very good, can be the ones that are most rewarding, because you're constantly focusing on developing these skills. And the skills are what I actually wanted to focus the lion's share of this podcast on, because I think that they quite often go understated. We hear about the links between video games and violence and stuff like that, but not actually video games and things that are good for you, like actual tangible skills that have real world implications. And we will be touching on the violent video game thing, but spoiler alert, I think it's a load of rubbish, because I've played violent video games my entire life, pretty much, and I don't feel like I've got any more. It's encouraged me at all to be violent in the real world because it's a video game.
Certainly not. I've grown up with them, and perhaps you could make the argument that it's desensitized me to particular scenes of violence shown in films and such, but violent films will have done the exact same to me. And also, not to dob myself in too much, I am still very squeamish when it comes to seeing videos of actual real world violence being committed.
I think it's a very different thing, and until they become basically photorealistic, I think that there isn't really going to be this crossover as far as I'm concerned. And I think that the literature seems to hear me out, although there certainly are psychological studies that suggest there is some link between the two. Quite often they're quite poorly done, and some of the more stringent ones actually say, well, it depends on the domain of the game for a start. Like, you're not going to play a puzzle game and then all of a sudden go out on a rampage, are you?
No, the Witness isn't... Actually, to be fair, The Witness is a boring enough game that it did inspire me to want to commit violence, but that's a completely different thing. Obviously joking there. But for instance, from my own experiences, when I was a teenager, I was well enough aware of all of the things that were being sent to everybody that I knew to know how to avoid, say, gore links. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to be sent something that was going to be like an ISIS beheading video, I knew how to avoid that. As such, I managed to avoid seeing those sorts of things and still find those kinds of videos very squeamish even today. I don't like seeing videos, shockingly enough, this is going to be a hot take, but I don't like seeing videos of people actually dying in the real world.
It's way.
It's somewhat upsetting.
It's almost like you're a normal human being.
I know, but I think that the proliferation of that kind of media, certainly when I was a teenager, did far more to desensitize people to real violence than anything that I've encountered in a video game.
I'm of the opinion that exposing people to the ugliness of violence is actually a moral good. Like, I want the news to show people what it's like on the ground in proper warfare, and then people will know what they're in for.
Well, that is a different side of the moral argument as well, which is how moral is it to shield people from the realities of how grim existence can be for lots of people across the world. We in the West are lucky enough to be shielded from a lot of that in our day-to-day life. I mean, less and less as more and more immigration floods in, but still, we are, for the most part, very shielded from that kind of things. And is that beneficial to us? For instance, if a war does break out, not saying that there will, but if a war did break out where conscription had to take place, how would most people react? Because it won't be Call of Duty.
No, but I think that understanding the world for how it is always very important. So realistic depictions of things are good. Like, when I see violence on a computer screen, I don't think, oh, this is actual violence that has real world harm, because I know it's a game. So I normally find it quite entertaining. Like, I've been playing a lot of Chivalry 2, and in that you can cut people's heads off.
Chivalry 2 is good fun.
It's great, yeah. And if I saw that happen in the game compared with if I saw it in real life, the two would not be even close in comparison. I would probably laugh at the video game and be horrified and scarred for the rest of my life if it happened in real life.
Understandably so. For another example for me, when Call of Duty World at War first came out, I remember being excited because I found out very early on playing that game, it was the first Call of Duty I really remember allowing dismemberment. So of course that was the first thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to kill all of the enemies in such a way that it would blow them apart as much as possible so I could revel in the blood and gore. But shockingly
you're slightly
enough,
scarier than you were when we first started this.
Shockingly enough, I don't want to do that in real life, though. That would be rather strange, in fact.
That's a word for it. I mean, there are many others as well, but let's just carry on.
Somewhat deranged.
So, yes, I've referenced a study quite a lot in this, just to on the get-go, that I've linked in the reading list, titled The Benefits of Playing Video Games, which is a 2014 sort of meta-analysis overview sort of thing published in the American Psychologist Journal. And I thought it was quite good, and it's a good review of the evidence. So I'm not going to go through and tediously attribute everything, but if you want to find out what I'm citing from and where, it's come from here, as well as my own independent reading of the literature, which I've done fairly extensively. So the first and most obvious thing is one of the psychological benefits is to de-stress and relax. I mean, it's fairly obvious that that's a beneficial thing, isn't it? And most entertainment is for this purpose, isn't it? It's to take your mind off of your worldly woes and
it can be for a number of different experiences, because we as humans, we crave various different experiences, so hence why we end up watching horror films and such. Yes. Because we want to put ourselves into a safe experience that we know can replicate the emotion that we don't typically feel in the modern world. But yeah, for the most part, it's good to de-stress. I will say perhaps games like Sekiro and Dark Souls aren't always the best for de-stressing. In fact,
Elden Ring, easy.
Well, when you get to the point where you're so good at Sekiro that you can kind of fade out and just enjoy the bliss of the swords smacking against one another as they deflect perfectly each time, that can be a kind of bliss, you're right.
Mm-hmm. But the thing here is that you're encountering something stressful, because some games are stressful sometimes, aren't they? That's fair enough, particularly like competitive multiplayer games.
Bear with me
things
for a
like... Oh...
Sorry, I've got a bit of a tickly nose today, so apologies if I sneeze at all.
How dare you? But where was I? So if you're playing something stressful, the fun is overcoming the stress, so it's no longer stressful because you're competent at it, which is kind of a good meta-narrative for your life as well, in that you would surely be enacting neural pathways in your brain that are to do with stresses and kind of diverting them so that you feel more competent at dealing with them, but in an environment where the cost of failure for doing so is very low. You get to start again or respawn or reload your save or whatever. It's not really that significant. You maybe lose a little bit of time, maybe you get D-ranked in the rankings if it's something like Halo, but it's not the end of the world, and that is something that's quite good for modernity, because people are very stressed about things that people need not be stressed about. I mean, I find that...
You're coming across a bit like a monk right now.
Yeah.
Throw away your worldly worries. Pick up the controller.
Next, I'm going to start levitating in my chair. But
Oh, very impressive. I'm looking forward to that one.
But yes, it's, I think, a very important aspect of it that does get overlooked, that... Not only does it help you de-stress, but it can help you, the stressful ones in particular, deal with stress in your own life in other ways, because these are like mini, they're almost like dreams in a way, aren't they? Like playing a video game is like entering a dream. You're experiencing the motions of something that isn't necessarily...
I can tell you've been watching Twin Peaks.
Yeah, sorry, I'm becoming very Lynchian, aren't I? But it's...
It's good to see.
You're looking at me like a proud father
now. I'm so pleased.
But, yeah, where was I? You've thrown me off now.
You're talking about how entering a video game is like entering a dream.
And one of the main theories of dreams is that it's a safe environment for you to encounter things that might be difficult in life, and you can work through them without the stresses of modern life. And I think that aspect is very, very important. And
I don't know if we're going to get on to... some of the potential negatives that
of course,
come to
yeah.
it.
But we will,
just to seed some, the best argument that I've heard against overindulging in video games, because once again, I think what we're talking about here is you've got to take these things in moderation. It's all very well and good to do your day of work and then reward yourself at the end of the day with maybe 2 or 3 hours playing some games. Obviously, that can be a very beneficial thing. But if you are in a position in your life where you are using the game as a substitute for work, as a substitute for improving yourself personally, I think the reward feedback loop that you can get from playing video games can be quite negative, but that's if you're in that position in your life. You can end up using the reward feedback mechanism of a video game to substitute actual development in your real life. That's the best argument, and that's the one I've heard. Don't want to pretend like I came up with that. That was one that I heard from Dave the Distributist, who does make very good cultural critique videos on YouTube.
I mean, I've seen people where this has been the case, where they played video games when they and improving their characters when they could be improving themselves. And I think that it should be a means of augmenting your life. It shouldn't become your life in totality.
Absolutely.
So another thing which is very important is that sometimes when you're really focused on a game, it induces the flow state. Are you familiar with the flow state?
Yes, pretty much, I'm very familiar with the flow state.
Where individuals have high levels of control, but reduced levels of self-awareness. So they're just really focused on what they're doing, but they're doing so very competently. It's where a lot of, say, your best driving or your best sportsmanship occurs, in this sort of flow state where you're in that perfect blend between self-awareness and non-awareness.
Well, the movements that you need to take when you get in the flow state become instinctual. So it feels less like you. One of the big impediments to being good at anything is overthinking it. For instance, being a guitarist, if you are trying to play a particular lick and you know what it should sound like in your head, but you're thinking too hard about how to get there, say if you're not skilled enough in knowing scales or where the notes are on the neck, then that will impede your ability for your fingers to be able to move naturally across the neck, because you'll just overthink it and you'll stuff up and you'll, you know, everything will go wrong. Whereas if you get into that flow state, then it will come more natural to you. And similarly, the flow state I became when I was about 13 years old, very good at Guitar Hero. And Guitar Hero on some like the hard and expert difficulties was something where the flow state began to come into come into play for me. And in fact, it was to such the point where you've probably experienced it. You played Guitar Hero, right?
Only briefly. I never actually owned it myself.
Oh, really? Well, you'll have played it at a friend's house, right?
I've played real guitar lots.
But you'll have played Guitar Hero at a friend's house,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Thank you. There's the thing where you get the rolling runway of the guitar neck as it goes, and it shows you the notes that you need to play, and you do that. If you do that and then look away from the screen after you've played it for a while, you will notice that the wall begins to move as well. It's a very strange
experience.
That's an optical
illusion, though, isn't it? Because your eyes become used to the sensation that you're looking at. I've had it before where I was listening to an album. It was a folk album which had a Celtic triskel on it, which is the series of spirals. And I've been staring at that album cover while I've been listening to it. And then I looked away at the wall and it's been like an optical illusion.
That sounds very interesting.
But back to the flow state. So the actual induction of the flow state, regardless of where it's induced, has been linked to greater commitment to school studies, greater achievement more generally, higher self-esteem and reduced anxiety. And of course, there could be a question of correlation or causation here, in that people who already achieve these could be better at inducing the flow state. But I think that with a lot of these relationships, there's a bit of a complex back and forth, in that inducing the flow state more often allows you to induce it, say, in different circumstances. I think that seems to be fair enough, that, for example, since starting this job, I've actually been able to focus far better on what I'm trying to do whilst there's distractions. I mean, we work in an office that's a newsroom. There's lots of noise going on all the time. And since doing so, I can now sit and read on a train without listening to music or anything. And I wouldn't have been able to do that because the sound of people talking would have distracted me. And it's one of those things whereby if you induce the state enough, you can get some sort of transferable skills out of it. And I think that is probably the place where this resides in reference to video games.
Well, it can certainly give you practice at finding whatever state of mind or circumstances you need to be in to access the flow state. Mm-hmm. I am still evidently not quite as adept at it as you are, because sometimes I do really still need to put my headphones on, put some relaxing music on to be able to focus a bit better. But sometimes you are right. Sometimes you're able to tune out the rest of the world and allow it all to become white noise, which, if nothing else, in fact, can help you focus even further on what you're doing. Because sometimes I find that if you are in complete silence, sometimes just the sound of your own breathing can start to become a bit of a distraction. You start to focus too much on the peripheral elements.
I mean, if you're getting distracted by your own breathing, I feel like you're getting too easily distracted.
Well, it would be like if you were, say, in a sensory deprivation
chamber
or something like that, if you understand my meaning there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've always wanted to go in one of those, to be fair. Joe Rogan bigs it up.
Oh, of course. You and your DMT and your sensory deprivation chamber.
I didn't say DMT, but there we go.
It's implied in the Joe Rogan reference.
That's true, that's true. So another aspect which I think does go understated is the social aspect, in that most people who play video games today do so with their friends. in a social way. It's not necessarily this same thing that it was, I don't know, 20 years ago, going back before the pre-internet
online
times.
I would say I'm more antisocial playing video games now than I was back in the day, because the real social aspect of games for me 20 years ago was the fact that games were much better optimized and the hardware was designed so that you'd be able to get 4 or 5 friends
into a room, and
you'd all plug the controllers in and the games would be designed for multiplayer split screen. Like Time Splitters 2 had 4-player split screen, which was fantastic fun.
To be fair, the death of split screen is a shame, because although playing online is good, nothing beats being able to be there in person.
Nothing beats being able to cover your friend's eyes when they're about to get a shot on you, or punching them in the leg right when they're about to kill you in Time Splitters 2.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.